6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually by the beautiful Anna Forsyth at A4603. So just pulling a curtain back here, I've been pronouncing Anna's surname incorrectly for years now as the piss poor host of this show that I am.
I mean, one, thanks for the compliment, although that's another like HR violation, I think.
Just complain to HR, as we know. Put it in writing. I'll review it.
But yeah, I just generally don't go with the proper Scottish pronunciation of my last name because it tends to confuse people. I think I had someone on the phone saying, Anna from what? And I was like, never mind. So I tend to just say Forsyth because it's easier.
Well, again, that's all I've been using the entire time I've known you, and I've just had my mind blown that is not the case. But the reason this came up is we're joined by Andy Eide from The Sound of Hockey. You can find him as Andy Eide, E-I-D-E, on Twitter or soundhockey.com. He is one of the co-hosts of The Sound of Hockey podcast. You might recall we had Darren on just a couple weeks ago, and months back, John had joined us. We now have the trifecta.
Yeah, you've done it all. You've done it all. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, I mean, appreciate you joining us. I apologize that you're the last of the three to be here.
That's no reflection on you.
I would say you saved the best to last, but that's probably not true.
Aw.
Self-deprecating.
Checking off the box. That's what you guys
do. Yeah, you're sure you're not Canadian?
My grandmother was Canadian. That counts.
There you go. That's probably where it came from.
She's from Saskatchewan.
Ah, the prairies.
Nice.
The original plan, so Anna and I had actually talked about it. It's like, well, we should see if we can get the guys from Sound of Hockey on. But we use this platform called Squadcast, which I think some of our listeners have heard of. And we have a four-person limit. So we didn't want to have the situation where we had the three of you draw straws and have one
right
not get included.
This works.
Give us a note. This episode is going to be much like the one a couple weeks ago. We're going to know Andy a little bit, understand he has not always been a fan of the Kraken. Why? Because they're new. But a little birdie told me that he might be a fan of a team much closer to our own heart. We'll get his take on the hiring of a head coach down there in Seattle, a little bit about what's going on in the hockey world, and I don't know, all the bits and bobs that we can think of as we normally do on the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Well, Andy, I mean, we've sort of, you know, got a little bit of an idea. You have descendants from Saskatchewan.
Yes.
we know that, and we've got the pronunciation of the last name. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I understand, as you said, you might be a Canucks fan or had been at some point.
Yeah, that was the Canucks were my first NHL team. I got into hockey here in Seattle watching the Thunderbirds. I went to a Thunderbird game. Kid showed up at my high school one day, and he was a stranger. He said he was from Lethbridge, which we didn't think was a real city. But he said he was here to play for the Seattle Thunderbirds, and that kind of blew my mind because I knew of the Thunderbirds, but I just assumed that I didn't really know hockey then. I thought they were probably like a minor league team, that they were men, and to find out they were kids my age kind of was strange. And we went to a game, a bunch of us, one Friday night, and it took me about 5 minutes to fall in love with the sport. And from there, I discovered, obviously, the NHL. Down here in Seattle, we get CBC, so we got Hockey Night in Canada, so I grew up watching that a lot. And then the Canucks were the local team. So that's just who I hitched my wagon to, so to speak. Talked my dad into taking me to drive me up for a couple games and at the old Pacific Coliseum. And that was it. So I started rooting for the Canucks.
Right. So who were your players growing up that you attached to?
I started in junior high, high school. And then in college, I went to Western in Bellingham. And we got, I forget who, I might age myself here, but I think it was. Was it CBUT that used to just broadcast Canucks games before there was a lot of cable? I forget who it was, but we got that. So we got all the Canucks games on TV, and that was like the 93-94 team. So it was that team. It was the Trevor Linden and, you know, Jyrki Lume, those guys. And, you know, and so that was the team that I, that kind of hooked me watching. So I watched all that whole season.
Yeah, it would have been trying to, back then it probably would have been BC TV, but we would know as global locally now. I mean, so before Rogers bought all of the NHL rights in Canada, and then really before Sportsnet TSN were full mainstream, you used to be able to watch the Vancouver Canucks on CBC if it was Hockey Night in Canada or a nationally televised playoff game. You got to watch them on BC TV or VTV, which was VTV is now CTV. It's all all crazy. It's not as simple as like in the US. You have ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and then cable, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're getting more and more cable sports channels now. The new NHL deal is split between two, and so
yeah, you have to go get yourself ESPN.
Yep.
At least they don't have hockey on the Ocho. I mean, that'd be a whole different.
Well, they might. We'll wait and see. They had when I was a kid. They had NHL. They did a pretty good job back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a niche sport in the U.S. now, pretty much.
Yeah.
But the era of hockey fan that you sort of became more engaged with would have been spaghetti skate time, right?
Oh yeah.
Best jersey ever, right?
I think the first game I may have gone to was still the one before that, the V. I think I might have caught a V game. And then after that it was a spaghetti. My buddy and I snuck into a game at the Coliseum once, by the way, too. That was a spaghetti game.
Wow.
Against Montreal. We drove from Bellingham to Vancouver in a snowstorm. We left Vancouver when the game started. Got there at the start of the third period, and Usher just said, "Are you boys in or out?" And we looked at each other. We said, "We're in." We went and found an empty seat, watched the third period.
It's actually not that surprising you could get in. I mean, so Anna, the era of the Pacific Coliseum was obviously a different era of hockey. The Vancouver Canucks didn't sell that barn out all too often, so there were always seats. But my dad was a bus driver, and he always did his best to sign the shuttle buses that went to the Pacific Coliseum from different destinations, because once his route was done and all the fans were there, he just walked right on in. They didn't question it. They didn't ask him for a ticket. They just saw him in his bus driver uniform and you got to watch games.
I mean, I was still around in the Giants era of the Coliseum. So I saw quite a few games there. And I also saw a Cirque du Soleil show where someone in the audience snuck on stage. Oh, so awesome. I guess security is pretty lax around there.
I love that building that it was in a residential neighborhood. There was like a park across the street and houses. And my dad dropped me off and my brother once we went to a game. He said, "We'll meet you at this park." I just thought that was pretty cool. It's right across the street.
The Pacific Coliseum. I mean, even in modern day, it's a tough place to get to transit wise if you're not driving, but it's a nice old barn. Like, I don't know if you ever went to a Canucks game and then tried to go downstairs to see the players, because it wasn't that hard. You just had to go down the stairs and then there was the dressing room. The only thing that separated you as a fan from the dressing room was one of those like 3 foot tall wire fences that they sort of, you know, the portable fences they put up and maybe like 10 yards of distance to the door.
Right.
It's a little different now in Rogers.
Yeah. Good luck trying to get, I mean, you can get close to the players if you go down prior to the game to the first row, but.
Yeah. But I once saw Sven Berchi stop by security. So I think it's pretty difficult to get near the players, even if you are a player.
A funny story about Rogers. I was there. I was credentialed when the Islanders came back to play with Barzell's first time. And so I was down there really early before the game, and I was opening the door to go to the elevator, and I held the door open for the Sedins, which was kind of a cool thing. I look up, and there's the Sedins walking in. So I held the door open for them, and then they announced their retirement a week later. So I'm not sure if that's because they saw me there, if that somehow affected their – maybe it's time to hang them up if this guy's going to be around. I don't know. It felt kind of coincidental.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't say I've held the door open for the Sedins. I did hold the door open for Roberto Luongo and Brendan Morrison. There was one night, and then one other night where Marcus Naslund got into the elevator sort of the same time I was in it, And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to push in. And I'm like, dude, I should be getting off this elevator, I think. Like, I'm not sure what protocol is here. Good times.
Yeah.
But, you know, you would mention that you would sort of fall in love with hockey by watching the Thunderbirds. And yet, as I understand it, you kind of fell in love with the Thunderbirds, did you not?
Oh, as a kid, yeah. That was like, I was obsessed. I became obsessed. That first game hooked me to where I went to as many games as I could all through high school, followed them through college. I will say, though, like there's a little time after college where I kind of, you know, got more into the NHL than the WHL. So I went away from it for a few years, but then came back as an adult and then got a gig covering the team, ironically. So, yeah, but the Thunderbirds will always hold a special part, you know, place in my heart because they're the team that got me into watching hockey and then loving hockey.
The good old Dub. I mean, I guess the connection there as well is, as Anna had mentioned, Vancouver Giants. Mm-hmm. We've got sort of the regional rivalry, which we'll talk more about as we get in with the show. But the gig you have with the Thunderbirds, is it a writing gig or what is it that you do?
Yeah, so I've been for the last 8-9 years now. I've been covering them for ESPN Seattle's website, so it's been mostly writing. That when I first started that they were the radio state, the flagship radio station. But even after that switched, I still wrote for them. And, that's where a lot of my writing was. But I have done a lot of radio for them. You know, Tom Boyne, their great play by play guy, has asked me to hop on the broadcast from time to time. So I've done that. I've done some live TV, like a lot of this last year during the pandemic, I did six, Thunderbirds games on television here, locally, as a color analyst. So that was a fun experience. I had to wear a tie, which I'm not a fan of, but that's what you do when you're on TV. But yeah, so it's been mostly writing, but I've gotten into other mediums about it as well, as much as I can.
Cool.
And how's that relationship been with the team over the years? Like, I guess it's kind of hard to jump between writer where there's a bit more critical distance and like color guy.
Yeah. When you're working for the team's broadcast.
Yeah.
It's been fine. You know, I think I've built up some trust with them. You know, when I first started, like players, for example, would barely talk to me if it wasn't an official interview. And, you know, now the players know who I am to where, you know, you get the good stuff when it's off the record and they're just telling the stories. That's when you get the good stuff. But I think I've built up some trust with the organization. I do treat that a little differently than I would like when I write about the NHL because of the age of these kids. You know, if a 17-year-old kid flubs a pass or something, I'm not going to rip him in my story. Because he's a 17-year-old kid and doesn't deserve that. So I have handled that a little bit differently than I do when I talk or write about NHL players who are, and I think the team recognized that and saw that I wasn't out to just, you know, take cheap shots when I could. I would be honest though, if the team struggled, you know, they would struggle. My first year covering, they lost 15 games in a row. So, you had to find new ways to say they lost again and think of ways to ask the coach, like, so you lost again, what's going on? And that was a pretty good experience because everybody was miserable. Everybody at the rink was miserable during that stretch.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned that because I've been doing a lot of like draft reading recently and it's interesting. Like these kids are 18 and then you just get these adult men talking about their weight.
Yeah, their deficiencies. And
yeah, it's just,
this guy can't skate.
Strange. Yeah. It's very strange.
Oh, you know, with all this going on, how did you get connected with John and Darren and, you know, all tied into the Sound of Hockey?
Well, as you probably know, John was kind of emerged as a figure in the hockey community here when he started his NHL to Seattle blog, which was, you know, a grassroots blog to just bring attention to what was going on in Seattle and hopefully someday get a you know, an NHL franchise. This was like 8-9 years ago and we hadn't met, but we followed each other on Twitter and I always read his stuff. And near the end of the year, like in December, one of those years, he put out a tweet, like he had here's a checklist of things I want to accomplish the next season. And like number 5 or 6 on the list was have a beer with Andy Eide. So I responded to that. So that's easily done. We can check that off, you know, pretty easily. So we got together, we talk a lot about what, you know, the NHL coming here and, you know, we had beer, we watched hockey games together. We went to various bars around town. And so it just grew from that. And then when it was getting a little bit closer and it looked like the things were going to start happening, he approached me about, you know, changing the site or having more, you know, stories, actual written stories on the site. And I at the time had some time on my hands and I said, yeah, I'd be happy to help, and started writing for the site. And then he met Darren and said, let's do a podcast. And the rest is history. And the site's grown now. We've changed it from NHL to Seattle to Sound of Hockey. Mm-hmm. And because of where he was in the community, the team came to him, you know, before they even the OVG, the group that built the arena, came to him first. And so we have a lot of credibility with the Kraken. And so we get a lot of access. You know, I've interviewed, you name the person in the organization, I've interviewed him and been able to have access, do stories. You know, I get credentials for press conferences now and everything. So, it's been a pretty amazing run that they see the value in us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's very cool. Like I sort of shared this with their Aronofs episode. And when we talked to John, it was the same thing. Like obviously completely different scenario up here in Vancouver. You got the Canucks who have, you know, got many, many years of futility behind them. but there's also like a ton of sort of engaged media coverage. Like when we think about sort of the traditional mainstream media, mm-hmm. and then with sort of this new stream content, equally just as much, if not more. Like we often have a running joke. There's 131 Canucks podcasts. We might be the longest running, but if I were to send an email to the Canucks, I'm lucky if I don't get a bounce back telling me that I was sent to spam or something like that.
Yeah. See, here, if we tried to do a Seahawks podcast, we would be facing the same challenges that you guys are. They wouldn't respond to us either.
Yeah, but it's really cool that you sort of have that ability and have that access, because I think it helps. I mean, obviously helps grow the market a little bit better, connecting to fans through another medium. But I think it also sort of goes to some of the things that we've said about the Kraken as an organization, is they feel to me that they're trying to pull the NHL forward and become more progressive. Mm-hmm. Whereas a team like Vancouver, who've done progressive things, maybe more in that traditional space.
Yeah. I mean, from day one, they've kind of said, we want to do things different. You know, we're building a team from scratch and we're going to do it our own way, regardless of what the traditional NHL team or NHL franchise has been. And they've lived up to that. It's more than just talk. You know, you look at some of the initiatives that they've done. I've done some writing for them as a freelancer, and they had me out covering a Pride hockey tournament that they were a part of sponsoring. And I mean, just things like that. It wasn't just they're putting their name on it. They actually had people out there, staff out there, and, you know, and they really supported that. They just all those, you know, kind of progressive thinking that they're doing. And those are their values that they share. And they're not afraid to say, these are our values that we are going to pursue. And, you know, you get some trolls on the internet that, you know, give them the little stick to hockey thing. But why should they? You know, what's wrong with an organization saying these are the things that we believe in. These are the things that we support. And we're not afraid to say it.
I mean, they have no hockey to stick to currently, so I think
that's true. Yeah. Good point.
Good works is definitely the way to go right now. So
that's right. Stick to hockey. Well, we have one player under contract.
Yeah. So
on that sort of note, you know, there is a little more hockey to talk about than just one player, because you also have a head coach.
Yep.
With the hiring of Hextall, which, you know, I think if I look at sort of our you know, C4 podcast community, it was an off the board hire. Would you say that it was kind of off the board in your sense as well? Or do you think Hextall was in the mix?
We had not heard his name anywhere. None of the big NHL insiders had ever mentioned his name and being in the running, mm-hmm. Which is pretty impressive, because they had apparently been talking to him since as long as last summer. That's when they began talking to him. You know, they announced that the press conference was happening last week, and the night before, I still thought it was Rick Tocchet, just because that's the name we'd been hearing, and he had three interviews, yeah. And I spent some time researching Rick Tocchet. I had like 300-400 words written, ready to go. I just had to add quotes in to a story. And on my way to the press conference, I think Darren Dreger or somebody like that tweeted out, "Oh, it's looking like it's Dave Hextall." And I was like, "What? That can't be right." Yeah. But that's the guy who came walking out and sat at the podium. So yeah, he surprised almost everybody. Nobody locally here had Dave Hextall on the list going into that morning.
And what your kind of initial reaction to it? Like, what do you like about him? Are there any concerns you might have about his hiring?
You know, I didn't know what to think when it started, because I hadn't done a whole lot of research. But
yeah, right.
I got to talk to him one on one, and I obviously remember when he was, you know, the Philadelphia head coach. And I know that was, you know, they did make the playoffs a couple of years, but they didn't go very far. They didn't get out of the first round, and it wasn't the most overwhelming time. But then, you know, he had two good years as an assistant in Toronto, and talking to him, and you know, when hearing questions people were asked, I like it more and more. I like it that it's not you know, some of the other names that were thrown out there didn't excite me. And a lot of them were guys that just got fired, which I think is funny. The NHL, these guys all got fired for poor performance. Well, they're the next candidate for the next coaching job.
Yeah, it's the same.
I like it that it was off the board and it was a guy who didn't just get fired. And actually, I think had some successful season as an assistant in Toronto. Obviously, Toronto didn't go very far. But so it came up in the press conference, and I love the idea of the second chance head coach. Like he was a head coach in the league for 3+ years, went off for 2 years to look at the position differently as an assistant, and now comes back as a head coach for a brand new team, brand new start. So I'm very curious to see what he does there. There's a lot of examples of coaches who underwhelmed their first go around. Mm-hmm. Like Peter DeBoer is one that jumps out. I mean, he had 3 years in Florida and like missed the playoffs every year, and then his first year in New Jersey goes to the Stanley Cup final, and he's now got a team every year that seems to be contending. So there's more than just him. There's a lot of guys out there that have that. So that's my hope, is that he becomes one of these guys who learned some lessons, maybe learned what not to do, and you know, in Toronto learned what to do, and now he's going to come and he's going to be able to start from you know, square peg one and do it his own way.
The sort of, before I follow up with a question on Hextall, talking about coaches who were in one job and out of it, being hired by a new team, running commentary up here was Travis Green was going to be a Kraken coach the moment the Vancouver Canucks cleaned house this offseason. Right? I mean, I'm not going to suggest that's actually the case, but that's what people up here thought, simply to help build the rivalry. I mean, there's still fans waiting for them to go on offer sheet. Pedersen, just to get the rivalry going and generate the buzz. But on topic of Hextall, though, like, is there any indication as to who he might be bringing in to help him on the bench?
They didn't get into that too much, nor did they have a time frame for that. They said they didn't announce. There was some internet rumor that I just saw before coming on here that the head coach of the Providence Bruins in the AHL, whose name escapes me at the moment, but that he was going to be coming in as an assistant. So it wasn't anything from the team. It was somebody who covers the Providence Bruins who was congratulating him. So I don't know how real that is, but that's the first name we've heard. Okay. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm curious how the local market's going to treat assistant coaches coming in, because that may or may not be a big story for some of the average hockey fans here. But that's coming. I would imagine before the draft we'll have assistant coaches.
Yeah, I mean, up here, assistant to the person who works the front desk at security is big news.
Yeah, I was going
to
say. Like,
assistant coaches, there's a full day's news cycle plus a little bit more.
I'm interested in it, and I think the diehards are interested who's going to be coming on board, but I don't think that'll be big news across the whole media spectrum here.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. Obviously, they've generated some excitement, like the season ticket sold out so quickly. How do you see it as like the average, like, I don't know what someone from Seattle is called, Seattletonian, but the average
Seattleite,
like satellite, I guess. the average Seattleite on the street, like, do they know about the Kraken? Are they excited for them to come?
They know about the Kraken. The Kraken definitely is a hit with, I think, anybody who's even a casual sports fan here will know that the team's coming, you know, who they are. You see gear. I was out to dinner with my nephew today, and we saw three people walk by wearing something, either a hat or a T-shirt with Kraken. So I think they're definitely a big hit. Now, do these people know the sport? That's a different question. There are a lot of hockey fans here. I think the impression from people who on the outside is that, well, nobody knows about hockey in Seattle. But the WHL has been a fixture here for over 40 years, and there is a hockey history. So there's a robust adult league here, and you have a lot of transplants. So people know hockey. I think there is still a section of people who don't. So it's going to be a weird mix of Kraken fans, of people who know the sport, and the people who've never watched it before or never followed it before. But they'll learn quick. I mean, when I went to a game, I didn't know what any of that. I didn't know what was going on, and and you just figure it out. The more I liked it, the more I wanted to read about it and learn about it, and you know, it didn't take too long to figure out what offside was and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. And then you just start learning even more and more about what the different positions do. So I think people will pick it up. And I think there'll be a strong fan base here. The Seattle does support its sports fans, its sports teams, as long as they do somewhat well.
Right. You know? But I think that's completely the point of Seattle. I mean, you talk about the 94 series. I don't even think I knew what Canada was then, never mind hockey, but like, here I am on a podcast, and I think that's what they're really trying to do the Kraken, and that's mm-hmm. what's great about it. And they're trying to do the work to broaden the fan base because, geez, hockey is a very white sport, and we could really do with broadening the base there.
Yeah, and that's something the Kraken have been working on. And again, it was more than just something they want to do. They actually are doing it. Right. They're actually going out into the community and some of the communities that haven't been well represented in hockey and trying to get those people interested in the sport and welcome and be welcome to the sport.
Right. Yeah.
We've talked about it on our show is something, again, and I sort of alluded to it, we would love to see more of that here in Vancouver because there is an opportunity to be had. And I feel that if the Kraken can show how they can do it and do it well. I mean, if we think it down just as business, from a business perspective, that's really good for business to expand your potential market into ones that maybe aren't completely saturated. So, I'm curious more on the sort of side of supporting teams, local teams, at least those that win. Would you say that the Seattle market's akin to Vancouver? Where, like, I'll use the Canucks as an example. The Vancouver Canucks had a season ticket wait list a mile long until they had one bad season, and that wait list disappeared overnight. Or do you think that there's probably more rabidity of the sports fans in Seattle to weather that type of storm?
Yeah, I think you could. I think back, it's been a while now, but I think back to the Seahawks in the 90s were terrible. They had a 2-14 mm-hmm. season. They weren't selling out their games. And that list did disappear. They did have, because my family was on it. We were on the wait list for season tickets for the Seahawks for about 12 years. And then after that 1992 season, when they went 2-14, we all of a sudden were at the top of the list, pretty quickly. They built that back up. So I think it won't, like, if the Kraken have a couple bad years, I don't think you'll see that. If it becomes prolonged, like we've seen with our other sports team here in the Mariners, like that, they have seen attendance, shrivel down over the years, and they're kind of on the uptake a little bit now. But I think it would take a longer stretch of futility. And I think, the Canucks have had some little flashes, last year in the playoffs, a little bit of a flash. And I think something like that would be enough to sustain it. But if you like the Mariners and you go 20 years without making the playoffs, I think you'll start to see tickets become pretty easily available.
Yeah.
But I think that about most markets. I think if a team is really bad for that long period of time and can't seem to get out of its own way, and and I think a lot of the interest is going to go, and people may still pay attention, but they're going to stop buying tickets.
Apart from Toronto, people just keep buying.
I was actually going to go back to your ancestral home of Saskatchewan, where the Saskatchewan Rough Riders could be the worst team in the league. Go 0-3 seasons straight, and there's still going to be people wearing watermelons on their head in 40 below weather, or freezing point in Fahrenheit. Like, it's just, I think you are right. The many markets, and I think it's something within the Pacific Northwest. We have a wealth of ways to direct our entertainment money, and then we have this beautiful area outdoors. Like, I talk about living in the tropical part of Canada, right? We don't have to worry about snow in the winter. Generally, we don't have to worry about these heat waves in the summer. Mm-hmm. But the point being is there's just so much to do and, very beautiful distractions to get us outside.
And we're the same down here. I mean, it's really no different. Yeah. We don't consider ourselves a tropical part of America, though.
Well, see, you actually have tropical parts. Yeah,
this is as hot as it gets.
Yeah, until Turks and Caicos suddenly joins the former Dominion of Canada, it's not going to be a thing that anyone can steal from me. But you're listening to Andy Ide with us here on the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So as a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, I have to ask a very serious question here. Now that you're becoming a fan of the Kraken, do the Canucks get tossed aside?
Or is there going to be a mutual fanship that will then become problematic on game night?
You know, this is something I actually have thought about over the last couple of years. And even before that, when there were first rumblings of Seattle getting a team, and I thought, am I just going to toss the Canucks? I mean, I have hats and t-shirts, and am I just going to never wear those again? Am I just going to, like, just, right, you know, just give up on them and have no loyalty? And I honestly don't know the answer. I guess we'll have to wait and see what actually happens. But I do, over the last couple of years, have to admit, as the Kraken have become more and more a thing, and I've been involved in covering it and writing it, I feel like I have kind of naturally paid a little bit less attention to the Canucks, not totally ignoring them. I watched a lot of games last year until it seemed like it was going really south, and then I kind of watched other games. But, playoffs last year, I was front and center every game, living on the edge of my seat. I think I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for them. It's kind of cool that I'll get to see them, you know, obviously much more than I used to. They'll be playing here in my hometown, which is kind of cool. So I think I'll always kind of have a soft spot. Like if they're in the playoffs and maybe the Kraken aren't involved or out of it, then I'm definitely on board rooting for them. I'm not going to be one of these guys like, oh, well, they're our division rival. I'm not going to, I want bad things to happen to them.
I asked this question because one, there's actually people within our community have been listening to our show who are from the Seattle area.
Sure.
One of our actually mutual friends of our show, Lisa Martin, who I know listens to Sound of Hockey. In fact, she's the one who first connected me to John.
Okay.
I did not know, NHLT Seattle had a podcast. And I did not know that I was breaking your news by saying that you were Sound of Hockey before that was official. John just needs to learn not to tell me things that I might be eager to share. But the thing is that I think there are going to be a lot of people. I mean, if you were a hockey fan in Seattle and you've been there for quite some time, there's a good chance you have been cheering for the Vancouver Canucks.
I would guess, and I don't have any stats or any data to back this up, but anecdotally, I would say that the majority of NHL fans that were here, living here, and had been for a while, were probably rooting. Most of them were probably rooting for the Canucks just because it's the local team and it's easy to get to. If you really want to go to a game, you don't have to get on a plane or anything. And, you know, you do have other fans because there have been a lot of people that have moved to this area. It's been a rapid growth in the city and this region. So obviously you have people who have come in from other markets and still hold on to their allegiances. But I would think that is, you know, the local sports station here, during the 2011 run, would broadcast Canucks games on the radio at night, you know, in the playoffs. And so,
cool. So
you did have that kind of stuff going on here. I remember during that run, I had a Canucks, I was hiking one day and I had a Canucks t-shirt on and a couple people walking the other way said, "Go Canucks," and on a trail here in Washington. Yeah. So I thought, yeah, there are Canucks fans here. There was a guy at Whole Foods I saw who had a Canucks tattoo, working Whole Foods. He was stacking fruit with his Canucks tattoo. So I think you have people who are going to have to figure that out, how they're going to handle their allegiance, both with the Canucks and whatever team they true for. You know, there's a hockey bar here. I always marveled at it when people asked me what kind of hockey fans there were, because you would go to that and the playoffs were always fun at that bar because they had enough TVs where every game could be on. And so people would gather around those TVs depending on which team they're rooting for. So you have these little pockets throughout the bar that the game you're watching, nothing's happening. All of a sudden you hear a roar going from the other one, but you would see eight, nine different jerseys in there, right? People rooting for whoever their team. So it was very fractured. So I'm curious to see how different things will be now that there's one team for the whole city to unite around.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll be everyone gets a second team or something. I don't know. Like, I know Lisa <knows? laughs> is going to be Canucks till she dies, but she likes the Kraken. She is a fan of what they're doing. But yeah, I think it's quite hard to switch.
It may depend on like how long you've been a fan of your previous team, how serious you were about it. Like, you know, if you moved here from Philly and you bled, you know, Flyers orange your whole life, and now you're in your 30s, that might be tough to just switch off. So it'll probably depend on the person.
I'm Vancouver, you know, born and bred. I'm a Canucks fan through and through. The Canucks weren't in the playoffs, so as far as I know, they're still on. I say that because I kind of knew that it might not be unless I don't actually know.
I got the game
recording right now while the game is in progress.
It was 1-1 when I last saw it, but that was.
Yeah, me too. I don't see the score right now because they're not showing that angle.
Is the mayor of Tampa Bay going to get her wish and possibly.
Why would you tempt the hockey gods with that?
Well, no, I know. Like, oh my goodness, I'm a Canucks fan.
It's 2-2 late in the third, actually, right? As we're
talking. Okay.
That happened in 2011. It didn't turn out so well. So, though I think in 2011 it wasn't, let's bring this home. It's like, Oh, we're not going to lose at home.
Yeah, that wasn't on purpose.
No.
Yeah, I think the hockey gods have already been tempted because a storm is heading for Tampa for game five. So,
That's right.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah, I think you win. You win when you can. Mm-hmm. Don't mess around.
Yeah, that's our lesson.
But the point I was gonna share is that even though I am a Canucks fan and I bleed blue and green, I am genuinely interested in the Kraken, and I know there are people up here who are genuinely interested. There are some who are very broadly, I'm no longer a Canucks fan, light my jersey on fire because of
the season
things.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just interesting that the Kraken have almost caught the eye of many people north of the border who are still probably going to be diehard Canucks fans. But hey, look, the Kraken are playing tonight. I genuinely think there's going to be this, you know, buzz or interest. Maybe it's the new shiny thing, the new team, whatever it might be, or it's the Kraken as an organization and everything they're doing. That's what's got me invested.
Was there that kind of interest when Vegas came in the league up there?
No.
Oh, no. The most that interest was is like, oh, I wonder if we can go down to Vegas and watch the Canucks play.
Or what player are we going to lose? And I wonder if it's just it might be the proximity, right? Like there might be more interest in Vancouver because the team is 2 hours to the south. It's not further away. It's going to be in your face more a little bit. And, you know, you might see once the borders are open, you might see people walking around with Kraken shirts on that you never really saw before. So I think I get that. It is a new shiny thing. It's probably all of that. You know, it's just the way they're doing things. And they are interesting. You know, they have an interesting arena they're building. Everything about them is kind of unique and a little bit different than the norm.
Mm-hmm. The you know, before we sort of get back into the Kraken, let's talk a little bit about the Vancouver Canucks. As a podcast, we are probably not big on the current managerial regime. That's the best way to
is anybody it. Are other podcasts who are?
Yeah.
There are.
Okay. All right.
I mean, when you have 132 podcasts, there's bound to be
somebody's gonna be
a bit of variety.
It's good to have differing opinions.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you've heard of Canucks Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Canucks podcasts are just a representation of Canucks Twitter. every color of the spectrum is represented there. But I'm going to ask you, so like looking at the Canucks, you know, as a fan just across the border, what are your thoughts on sort of the managerial regime that we see and the sort of status of the team as it is today?
Well, I'm surprised that they didn't make the big change. I kind of thought they would this offseason after just the way things played out. I think, you know, the word that keeps coming to my mind as a fan is just disappointed. It felt like that playoff run last year and with the youth of the star core, it felt like, man, this is the beginning. Like, I really thought this is the beginning. Like, and as a Kraken side of things, I thought, man, they're going to have to deal with this Canucks team, you know, right off the bat. And that's going to be hard because this Canucks team is loaded with young talent. But now we sit here after a season that didn't go very well. And you look at some of the offseason moves or the lack of offseason moves, you know, and you watch Toffoli light up the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Canucks head to head this year. You know, you think, man, that could have easily been avoided, some of this stuff. Like, why? You know, he seems like he might have helped the Canucks. And just some of the decisions, I just scratched my head. I'm like, that's what we're going to do. And so I'm a little bit surprised. I think the word is disappointed, though, because it felt like, man, you've got this core of four or five young players that you could really build off. And maybe eventually that they do, but it seems like they didn't really do that this year at all. Like, if they took a step back with those guys, and now you've got some salary cap issues that you're going to have to maneuver through. And I don't know that I trust them to be able to maneuver through those salary cap issues. And maybe you lose one of those core guys because of it.
Yeah. Well, that's when Seattle comes with the offer sheet the Canucks can't afford.
I will be shocked if they offer sheet Elias Pettersson, but I think it'd be fun.
It would be fun.
Okay. I'd hate it. I truly would, but it would be fun.
It would be fun.
I'm very pro offer sheet in general. Like, I think hockey needs to get over itself and just do fun things like that. But
somebody's going to offer sheet somebody one of these days, like seriously offer sheet him. That Sebastian Aho offer sheet from Montreal wasn't really serious, I didn't feel like, but it's coming someday. Someone's going to make a legit swing at somebody, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, hope so.
Well, see, now I'm rooting for that. Now I want that to happen. Now I want them to offer sheet Pettersson.
Yeah.
What would the reaction be the first time the Kraken came back to Vancouver with Elias Pettersson?
Okay, I think I'll actually talk about Luongo. I was in the barn when Luongo first returned to Vancouver, having been traded back to Florida. It was like a home game for the Panthers. People were cheering for the Panthers. You had a Lou chant. I think it was Ryan Miller that was in net, and he actually commented about it in the post game, how he didn't feel it was respectful of the fans
to do that,
to be cheering the opposition as much as they were.
I mean, I think that was when I took my brother and his partner to a hockey game for the first time. And my brother's watched a bit of hockey, but his partner didn't know it at all. So I'm trying to explain to her why they're cheering. She's like, I really thought that was the other guy's goalie. And I'm like, no, it is.
Now, see, I was at the first game up there when Mark Messier came back with the Rangers after he had left.
That's different.
They were not rooting for the Rangers that night.
Oh. No. So I don't know if you've noticed, there was the picture of the captains.
Sort
of when Bo Horvat got it. There is a captain who was not in that picture.
I did notice that, yes. I did like when Luongo inserted himself into that.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Yeah, that was good.
He's not the one you're talking about, though. That wasn't
him. No, I'm not the one I'm talking about. They've since taken a picture that has Luongo in it,
okay,
but
good.
Still doesn't have that other guy.
Yeah.
Looking at the fact that no change did occur, we have now seen the Sedins being brought into the fold as
special advisors to the general AHL, manager. Right? Yeah.
And they're working on the AHL. Is that their deal, right?
Their focus is going to be Abbotsford.
Yeah, that's the focus. I think the title doesn't include that, but I think that's what the idea is.
It's always interesting to me when a team brings back their former stars who have never worked in a front office. You never know how that's going to go. Steve Yzerman worked great, Trevor Linden, not so much, but you never know how that's going to go.
That was not necessarily Trevor Linden's fault.
Sure. I don't know I have no idea how the Sedins are going to do, what their passion for that is. Do they, working on the AHL team, they're going to be dealing with prospects and I would imagine and things like that. And it's good that they're part of the organization in some way, I guess, because they meant so much to Vancouver and the Canucks and, it was great watching them play, but I just have no idea how to gauge whether that's a good thing or not. Like, I guess we'll have to wait and see. Having guys like that in the organization, though, don't the fans start the first bad move Benning makes, which will probably happen soon? won't people start clamoring like, oh, let's move the Sedins up because they're the ones we love?
Yeah, it's already happening, and he hasn't actually done anything since the hiring.
Yeah.
Like, arguably, this has been a pretty good period of time for the Vancouver Canucks management group. But, to look at Trevor Linden as an example, when the Vancouver Canucks, or at least ownership, brought Trevor in, I believe it was purely as a marketing move. Mm-hmm. They saw a team that had significant success stumble out of the gate. And out of concern or a desire to, we still need to win, let's generate a whole lot of buzz. And that Trevor hiring did. In fact, one might argue when Trev left the team, he was still Teflon Trev. Like, he had such, respect within the fan base that he could have made some silly decisions. And people like, he's learning. It's not ideal, but it's Trev. I kind of feel like Daniel and Henrik will have the same sort of response from the general fan base, where he's like, Jim's got fans.
Yeah.
And bless Jim. It's a tough job that he's got. But he's focused on the day to day. And sometimes you got to look week to week,
maybe even month to month sometimes. Hey,
whoa. Let's just take it slow. One step at a time, one day at a time.
Yeah. I mean, the off season is one day at a time, right?
it's definitely going to be interesting for sure, because I think you're probably right, Chris, that they wanted to hire Trevor to stand there and look pretty and say nice words. And then when he started doing more than that and actually saying, hey, guys, I'm not sure this is the way we want to build a team, they showed him the exit. So I think they do know that if they did anything similar to the Sedins like that, they would just never get the fan base back. Like, that would be just a no-no.
And that's kind of the danger when you hire of legends for the franchise, right? Like, if it doesn't work out, what's your exit strategy, and how do you make it not look like you're canning the fan favorites for years?
Well, fans up here are already paying money to fly banners in the air that are asking an ownership to sell the team, right? So,
and I guess that's probably not going to happen.
No, wow.
Did you guys ever get Lyft or Uber? I know Aquilini was on that kick for a long time.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Yep. We have both of those.
Both are in town now.
But we did have Lyft on the ice before we had Lyft available in the city.
I remember that. Yes. That's why I'm asking.
So now, like, if Brian Burke was the GM, he won't go and make the phone call for the taxi. They'll just call a Lyft.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. The sort of, you know, on the topic of the AHL, so it was announced about a month or so ago, the Vancouver Canucks had moved their minor league franchise from Utica to Abbotsford. And then news has come out this week or this weekend that the Vancouver Canucks are going to be sharing their branding announcement. The rumor is it's going to be the Abbotsford Canucks, which I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah.
No, that's like, boring.
Yeah.
Like they could have done like Aviators or something to do with Abbotsford. Or some form of differentiation, but if it's just a matter of like, well, it saves us money on letterhead.
Yeah, that sounds almost lazy.
Doesn't feel good.
Yeah. And not many other AHL teams do that, right? I mean, you have the Penguins. There's a couple of them, the Bruins, Providence Bruins, right?
Yeah.
That might be.
And I was going to say, like, is it like the Stockton Heat? Yeah. But again, I mean, that's
good.
That's Flames. Like, that's no, and that's what I feel could be done.
Yeah. Right. I like linking it to the Canucks, but not the Canucks.
Yeah,
just the Canucks. It's Abbotsford.
Yeah, but especially how close they are. They're like, what, an hour away? Like, come up with a different name.
Well, this is the thing, though, is like, if you look at the Vancouver Canucks logo, in some cases, there's a V with a C. Yeah. They're just going to invert the V to make it an A and have the C. So they're just flipping the...
That would be lame. I would love to them to use the, like, Fraser Valley name, but I doubt that's happening. Just to them a broader appeal, but I don't think that's happening.
So Fraser Valley Canucks.
Isn't there a junior team named that already?
Probably. this ownership group, they take names like the esports team, the Vancouver Titans, essentially took that name from an actual semi-pro basketball franchise called the Vancouver Titans.
Jeez. Well, I tweeted out that I was in favor. Everyone loves the Johnny Canuck logo, right? And there's been some calls for that to be an alternative jersey for Vancouver. I thought that that's what their logo should be, and they should be like the Abbotsford Johnny, something that's a unique name and has that popular logo that even Canucks, you know, Vancouver fans would buy in droves. How many people are going to buy the inverted A?
As a Brit, just maybe do me a favor and put Johnny into Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay,
just
like. is that a same slang word in Canada though?
No.
Okay.
No. I just wouldn't be able to take it seriously.
I got you.
Here, Anna, we'll expand the podcast. We'll have a segment. You can explain it to your mom who listens to our show.
Hi, Mom.
But anyway, either way, find that logo. Get that logo involved in there. People want that jersey. You can call it whatever you want, but have that be the logo. And, you know, I don't think many people are going to buy the inverted V.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, I don't know. I know nothing. We'll find out after the show goes live, because I think it's Wednesday is when they're sharing this information. Just on that note, though, with sort of AHL, I think the announcement came out that Seattle is going to do the shared team route.
Yeah, for this first year, they are settled on Palm Desert down near Palm Springs. That'll be the long term home for their AHL franchise. They're building an arena. They had some problems getting it finalized in Palm Springs, so it delayed it a year. So they're going to partner with the Charlotte Checkers, which is also going to have Florida Panthers prospects on it. Not a big surprise. I actually predicted this on our podcast like a month ago, just because I'm convinced, and I don't know this to be true because I haven't had a chance to ask anybody, but I'm convinced that they were limited to an independently owned AHL franchise, because I just had a hard time seeing an NHL team saying, sure, on our AHL franchise we own, bring your players in and we'll spend some resources on your prospects. So I was convinced it had to be independent, which is only like 11 or 12 of them that are still independent. And Ron Francis has a history, and so does assistant general manager Ricky Olczyk, who was involved in the AHL with the Charlotte Checkers because they were Carolina's affiliate for a long time, their sole affiliate. So that one just made sense with me. So I wasn't shocked that's where they ended up. I think it'll be fine. It's not nearby, obviously, but I think for the first year, it won't cause any problems. If somebody's got to fly 6 hours, they'll survive it for that one season.
Right. I mean, Canuck survived several years.
Yes, with Utica, right? Yeah, a little far.
So. Well, yeah.
But, it did cause problems, but.
Last year when they shared the team, like this is the part that I still don't understand to this day. Utica seemed to be favoring St. Louis Blues players over Vancouver Canucks players
when the Vancouver Canucks were like, no, I don't think they owned the franchise. I think it was an independent own with like the Canucks fully embedded.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, as a Canucks fan, I know of years they've shared, like Chicago Wolves was shared for a few years. I think they shared with the Manitoba Moose a couple. And then if I go way, way back, Syracuse Crunch was shared as well.
It's not ideal. It's not the ideal situation you want, but yeah, for Seattle, they needed a home for just this 1 year. And I'm curious how many call-ups you'll see in year one. You know, we may not see that many unless there's some injuries or something, but
injuries. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be fine. People complained about it, but people wanted the team in Tacoma or something. You guys realize how close Seattle became to being Vancouver's AHL team, right? Back when they were asking for dates. Back when back when the Coyotes were having their vote whether or not they were going to stay in their arena, the Canucks called Seattle Center and asked about Key Arena and what available dates there were. And this is when everything was kind of percolating and they were waiting to see on the Coyotes thing and the NHL was kind of sitting around. So Seattle told Vancouver, don't do it because we have other plans. But Seattle nearly was the AHL home of the Canucks, which would have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's been a push to get a team out west simply because of travel.
Yeah.
Utica, great place, but trying to get from Utica to Vancouver, not so easy. but, I mean, I always understood the problem to be more with the AHL's desire not to continue to have teams west.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Now that
it starts to impact our schedule.
Abbotsford's pretty far away from the rest of the league. What's the travel going to be like for them? Are they in that Pacific Division?
They will be. I mean, but Abbotsford, the thing with Abbotsford is they did previously have an AHL team with the Abbotsford team before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That team went to Stockton. And,
but from what I understand, nobody went to those games except for when Chicago came because they were all the Canucks prospects.
Yeah, exactly.
and that was the thing. Like I don't know whomever had the idea, like, let's put
a division rival.
A division rival. If it was the Florida Panthers team, they might have actually gotten more people.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a nice rink there.
Oh, it is. A beautiful barn. Yeah. And, I mean, I was one of those fans that drove out to Abbotsford to watch the Wolves, the baby Canucks play.
Right.
So it should do well with it being the Canucks farm team now, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I think that you'll get tons of people out there because, I mean, people still go to the Giants and that's it captures the sort of suburban crowd a little. But I think there's, still a huge market of people that don't want to drive into Vancouver and spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on a family pack for a game. So
it's popular. Well, you just said, I get asked a lot about the Thunderbirds and the Everett Silvertips and whether the Kraken will cut into their fan base. But it's a similar situation. They're both in the suburbs. So I think what you just said is also applicable down here. And the tickets are a lot cheaper. You can get, a good Thunderbirds ticket for $25. You're not going to get that for a Kraken game. So I think those two WHL teams here will do fine.
Right.
And
go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, like with the Thunderbirds, like the Vancouver Giants previously played at the Pacific Coliseum. Mm-hmm. They actually knew that this was going to be an issue. And so what did they do? They marketed themselves as an accessible, family-friendly experience. And they did quite well in getting fans out. Unfortunately, they started to run into the issue of the Vancouver fan base and sometimes how we can be fickle. And what have they since done? They've actually relocated into the suburbs. Mm-hmm. They play out of the Langley Event Center now for most of their games.
Yeah.
As a means to connect with a suburban fan base that now doesn't have to make that trip all the way downtown to then travel all the way home. They do play big games at the Coliseum still, but it's those big games, the marquee
the teddy ones. Bear toss game.
Yeah, actually, exactly. At Rogers, they usually do the big games at Rogers as well. So
That rink in Langley, I've been there. I've been to that rink in Langley a few times. It's a nice little, it's perfect for what they got going there. And, it seats 4,000. It's great sight lines. It's a fun little rink.
Oh man, it's been a solid show here, and I'm just looking at the clock. We've already, we haven't even hit on half the questions we wanted to touch on here. But when we can travel again, I mean, it might be easier for you south of the border than it is for us north of the border for a period of time. Our plan is to obviously come down to Seattle to take in a game. I don't imagine we'll be able to acquire a ticket without mortgaging our house based on the demand that I'm seeing. But there's probably a greater likelihood you and the crew can come up here and grab a ticket a whole lot easier and for a discount because of the exchange rate.
Which is crazy to think.
Good, Yeah, I mean, it'll be pretty cool to obviously to see you guys up here. But, you know, for us who are going to be making the trip down to Seattle, what should we check out? What bars should we hit? Like, what is it that we need to do, you know, as our pregame ritual and potentially, you know, day before or after?
Well, where the arena is located, there, your choices of bars and restaurants is almost endless. You know, it's right down there. It's going to be down at Seattle Center, which is at the bottom of Queen Anne Hill. And you name it. You want a Thai place? There's a Thai place. You want Chinese or Chinese? You want, you know, a pub? There's several pubs down there. So you're going to have, for as far as pregame meals or postgame hangouts, you know, it's just going to be a question of where you can get in. And if you like a Seattle tradition, there's I don't know if you've heard of Dick's Hamburgers. It's kind of a Seattle legend. They have like three or four locations, but the original one is right by the Seattle Center, and then you can walk to it. And I know when the Sonics played there, even when the Thunderbirds played at that rink, that place was packed before and after games because the burgers are pretty cheap and they're greasy and good. And so that's a fun place to go. I doubt they'll let you bring those in, but.
Well, I mean, Costco across the street from the Rogers Arena usually has a lineup a mile long to get your hot dog and pop for a couple of bucks.
I parked there before going to the games there because there's not much parking there. But I mean, that's where I would go. I mean, there's you know, obviously all the tourist things, you know, you can go up to the Space and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the waterfront that has got some nice restaurants if you're here for a couple of days that you can hit. You know, there is a hockey bar that a lot of people talk about called the Angry Beaver that popped up a couple years ago. That can be a fun place to go. I think they're going to see more hockey, whether they fully reform themselves as a hockey bar or just become more hockey friendly. I think we'll see a lot of those popping up here in town.
That would be nice to have some hockey friendly bars up here too. So that would be good.
Okay. There really are. We do have hockey friendly bars up here. It's either when the Canucks are playing or it's the Black Frog, where you have to watch Oilers games.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, me and my friends end up going to the same, like, handful of bars because we know they'll play the game of sound because the amount of arguments I've gone into, over that.
Is Courtnell still there? I remember Courtnell had a restaurant right near the arena.
Yeah, that's long gone? Courtnell's Courtnell's long gone. And the restaurant that they used to have there, I think it's now gone. I think it got bulldozed, I believe. I could be mistaken. It's been a while. It's been over a year since I've been.
It's been a long time since I went to that bar. So I just remember having a good time there after a game.
If you come up here, I recommend the pint.
I've been there
because during happy hour with a pint, you get a pound of wings.
Pint is good fun. The American, that's the go-to for the Last Riders after games. I mean, again, it's just wherever you can get in before a game. Like the sports bar at Rogers is overpriced, but it has a really good atmosphere. So
yeah, it's a nice sports bar.
Yeah.
The pint, I was in Vancouver for the draft in 2019. So that was where we went after the draft each night. So if there's ever a big event like that there and you want to meet hockey media, they were all there. You name them. Right. There.
Yeah. I mean, it was a weird time. Cause I remember you just see these like, you know, very muscular looking young men in suits. And you're like, okay, I guess those are draftees. And then you'd see like older people, like older couples waiting for their sons. Yeah. And then, on the actual night of the first round, I remember you just like couldn't move for people like you recognized off the TV. It was crazy.
Yeah. Now there are going to be some bar type things in the new arena down here, which will probably also be overpriced, there. I haven't been to the sports bar in Rogers. I did have a really good hot dog there a couple of years ago. There's a gourmet hot dog place in the upper concourse.
Oh yeah. Steamers. Yeah.
Love that place.
Yeah. That place that is really here. Good.
Yeah, no, the sports bar, it is a phenomenal venue. You're paying it's stadium. The problem is it's stadium pricing, technically right. Like that's the struggle. Like if I'm going to watch a Canucks game, I get once I walk through those doors, I'm paying stadium pricing. I completely get it. It's why I get myself nice and happy before I go to the game.
Right.
But when you go to the sports bar where I have actually gone there without anything going on in the rink, you're still paying stadium pricing. And it's just a struggle.
Yeah.
Cause I can just cross the street and get something for three quarters of the price and free wings.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's more a thing of like, I would go there after games. Like my friend worked in Rogers and we'd like wait for her, That's how I met Eric Gabranson, was just like being there on a weekday night when no one else was in the bar.
Interesting.
So
that's news to me. Yeah. Anna stocks the bar for Eric Gabranson.
Yeah, I still wait there just in case he comes back.
He's there. Yeah, he might still be there. we are going to have a bar. The Kraken are building their practice facility here, and they are going to have a bar in there. So
right, this is the lawsuit. They had to change their name. Also,
they did change the name. It's now the 32 Bar and Grill instead of the Kraken Bar and Lounge. So
I quite like that.
It's all right. I was rooting for the Tentacle Tavern, but they didn't listen to me.
Yeah, I feel like
they should have. I like that.
There's some weird connotations in there, I think.
That's not a Brit thing either, is it? That's not a bad.
No.
Okay. It could be. Everything
weird
is.
Corners of the internet. Like
I think I know what you're talking about.
Oh man. So I mean this has been a blast. We'll have to get you back on again over the course of the season. I mean, we've said the same thing there, and we've said to John. John's actually gonna be rejoining us next month. We've got him lined up to join us for a show. Is there anything that we should ask him? Because he's coming back for the second time. And so we feel that now it's fair to put him on the hot seat.
When are you having him on?
It's in August.
So after the expansion draft and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
A couple things come to mind. So he has immersed himself in the expansion draft more than anybody I know. He has charts and things, and right. I don't even know if he needs them. Like, you watch a game with him, he'd be like, "Oh yeah, that guy potentially could be, you know, exposed." Some fourth liner who barely played, and John will tell you all about him, what his salary is and what his contract status is, because he's memorized all that. So a couple questions. Yeah. So you could ask him what he does with his free time now that the expansion draft is over. I worry about him a little bit. The other question that fans of our podcast might find funny is, ask him about what it's like to watch his favorite team play with people who don't care about that team. Because he got kind of mad at Darren and I once, because John was a Sharks fan, or is a Sharks fan, right, growing up. Mm-hmm. And we watched them play Vegas in the playoffs a couple of years ago, and Darren and I were cracking jokes, which John was not amused at all, and has told us he's not watching any Sharks games with us ever again. So we dared to have fun.
Wow.
So you can ask him. You can pick him a little bit about that. He likes talking about that. We were banned from watching games with him, Sharks games.
I'm trying to think, if that were to happen to Anna and I, we'd probably enjoy it. Like, we had Brock McGillis join us on a show about a month and a half ago. Uh-huh. And he's just taking shots like he can at the Canucks and Canucks fans.
That's like his biggest hobby, is just taking down Canucks fans.
This is great. This is awesome. Which kind of threw him off, because I think he expected that he'd get a reaction that wasn't like, oh my God, that's so funny. And because we genuinely thought it was.
Well, probably because the Canucks have been, struggled. We'll say struggled for a long time. You have to laugh about it.
Yeah.
It hurts so much that I stopped crying. I just laugh now.
Yeah,
but John's saying the Sharks were in the playoffs. It was the series that came back against Vegas a couple of years ago, and he was not amused that we were enjoying ourselves.
I would be unfair for me not to ask this question, because the expansion draft is coming up. Who do you think the Kraken are going to take from the Vancouver Canucks? Because, and I'll give you some background. John had originally suggested Cole Lynn was probably the target, but this was December of last year.
Right. Yeah,
the Vancouver Canucks, I don't know for certain, but I feel that they'll now protect Cole Lind over a player like Jake Virtanen reasons.
We're not going to want Jake Virtanen.
No.
Although before that happened, I thought he could be somebody that the Canucks, before he got into legal trouble, I thought, he's a guy who's a first-round pick, and I know it never worked out there, but maybe he's one of those guys that, a new place, a new situation, no bad history, could turn out pretty good. So he's a guy that I thought might come. Now, I did see the Athletic had Colin still had him exposed. So he would be
really
my pick. Other than that, man, it gets a little tough to see who the right guy is. I almost wonder if they end up picking someone that they don't actually take to the team. They could just take an RFA and let him go, let him walk. So Braden Holtby last summer, when he was first signed, everybody's like, oh, Braden Holtby's going to be the goalie the Kraken take. And they didn't play very well. So now I think there's better options.
Yeah, and there's a lot of real money left on that deal. So.
Yeah.
Can we introduce you to Louis Erickson?
Yeah, sure. You can introduce me to him. What are you going to give us to take him?
I know.
Oh, I think that's the only way that happens, is if like a first round draft pick comes with him.
Oh, well, actually, see, this is the thing. This is the thing. I potentially could see Vancouver doing something as stupid as that.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot because we kind of have a just like black hole on the blue line, and you know, we need to expose someone. And we've just talked about, you know, why not Tyler Myers? Because Seattle are never going to take him. Like,
yeah. And if you do, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, but, another guy that's going to have to come with something.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I know. Like,
but you may as well expose him. Like, and yeah. From Tyler Myers' side, you say, don't worry, Tyler, you're coming back, you know, but
yeah.
And he will.
I say, yeah, if you're Vancouver, expose all those guys, like just dare him to take one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
in fairness, if the Canucks lost Myers, it does hurt. Like they functionally have an even bigger hole minutes than they already have on the blue line.
Yeah.
Right. But that contract would actually do a lot of good not to be on the, on the cap. So, I mean, it's one way or the other. I'm curious who the Athletic would have protected over the Cole Lind. That's actually got me pondering, because that the Cole Lind being left unprotected, I honestly felt was the choice of Jake or him, and we're going to protect Jake. And there's, I just don't see the Canucks protecting Jake.
Yeah, I was surprised to see it. It was Thomas Drance. And I
trust
Drance. Yeah, I like him too. And I forget who else who he had protect him over on the top of my head. But if you go back and find that, when I read it, I was like, well, that's who Seattle should take. Cole Lind, boom, done.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he's a big question mark, but he has potential.
Upside,
obviously, he's just changed positions. So we still really don't know what we have in him, but. That's why I think it will be.
And he's young.
Mistake.
And he's,
yeah, exactly. That's just, yeah, a huge amount of potential there.
So,
oh, well, time will tell.
Yep. You know, and if I can confess to you, like, the expansion talk has been fun, like, over the last 6 months. We've done a lot of it on Sound of Hockey. And there's a million mock drafts out there, but I'm ready for it to happen. I'm kind of burned out on reading mock drafts. I don't want to read any more mock drafts. Because nobody knows what's going to happen, and nobody knows what kind of trades are going to happen or anything of these other side deals are going to happen. We don't know. So I'm just ready for it. We're only a couple weeks away, so let's just have it happen now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I think we're with you because we just don't want to see Canucks do something stupid.
which we know they're going to do.
Yeah, because this should be –
that's what's worst about
this should be a no-lose situation. Like, it really – Canucks have garbage. Like, please take – one piece of our garbage. But yeah, Canucks will find a way.
Yeah. I really think though, if Cole Lind isn't exposed, that it may be, they may take a guy who never plays for the Kraken.
Yeah.
Well, and I think when we were actually talking with Darren, he had sort of kicked around the idea that Seattle goes and takes someone that someone else might want.
That too.
And simply goes and, you know, gets a pick out of it, which is, again, that would be, that is sort of big brain theory that Canucks management group right now, I don't feel has the same capacity to execute on.
So they could watch Seattle get something for a guy they lost for nothing.
Oh, I could see Seattle take Louis Erickson, trade him back to like Boston for something. Like, I could see that happen. So Canucks fans would be like, oh my God, Seattle took Louis Erickson. This is awesome. Then they see the deal.
Why did we do that?
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of when I play chess. So I've just started playing chess again after like 10 years. And this is me every time. I think I'm so smart because I've like moved one piece and nothing can be gone. And then 2 moves later, I'm completely out of
position.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. The expansion draft is going to be a blast. You know, I'm joking about, you know, I don't need to read about it anymore, but because there's no new news, but yeah, we're looking forward to that. That's going to be a fun week, just, you know, just of events and names. And then the NHL draft comes right after it, which is fun too. So, and yeah, I mean, Seattle's pick a second, so that's exciting.
Power week.
And yeah.
It's a whole lot of hockey happening and on a timeline that we're not accustomed to. Like, I didn't realize it was July because there wasn't a free agent frenzy last year.
Or people are really stingy this year. Nobody's signing anybody.
Yeah. That could be it too. Yeah, exactly. But as we look to wrap up the show here, Andy, again, thank you for joining us. Thanks for sticking around as you have. What do our listeners need to know if they're looking to find you or anything you want to share with
them? Sure. So yeah, you mentioned my Twitter account. That's where you'll find me tweeting random boring things. But I write a lot of stuff for Sound of Hockey. So soundofhockey.com, you'll find a lot of my content. I've been doing stuff for NHL.com and as well as the Kraken website as well. You can hear me on Sound of Hockey, the podcast. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I still am writing a few, some Thunderbirds and WHL stuff here and there too. We'll see how much of that I do in the next upcoming season. That may wane a little bit, but maybe a little busy. I'm still always gonna support the WHL because I love that league, and I'm always gonna go to games. I'll always still be connected, but maybe just not day to day, as I have been. Even I spent 2 years covering it for Sportsnet too. I was surprised when they asked me. I almost wanted to say, "Do you know that I'm not Canadian?" But they did. they edited my copy into Canadian, by the way, too. Like if I wrote the word, their editor had to catch all that. So, props to them. I'll still always love the WHL. So, I'm going to go to games, but, hopefully I'm too busy to write about the Thunderbirds every day.
And as Andy mentioned, said at the top of the show, you can find him, Andy Eide, on Twitter, and that's E-I-D-E, and soundofhockey.com, obviously. Anna, what final words of wisdom do you want to share with all the listeners tonight? Or today, depending on when they're listening.
I won't embarrass Andy like I did Darren by gushing about Sound of Hockey, but it truly is a great podcast. If you don't listen, do. The last episode, they had JT Brown on, newly hired.
Which... I'm gonna share a secret. I've tried to see if JT would join us. So
no go or
No response. But again,
I don't think he's as concerned.
We're one of 131 Canucks podcasts. Why would you join a Canucks podcast, let alone 131st on the list?
Well, you guys are one of the oldest, right? You got to pump that when you ask him. Hey, we're the oldest one.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, I do.
Tell him it'll help build the rivalry. So help build the rivalry if JT Brown comes on your podcast.
Exactly.
Oh, totally. And honestly, I think we're going to have a Seattle Kraken segment.
Oh, cool.
It might be like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
What's cracking with the Kraken?
Yeah.
But
that's not bad.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a great interview.
I think you could workshop that better. But for now, what's cracking with the Kraken will do.
Yeah.
Beta. That's the beta name.
Yeah.
The final words of wisdom for me, everyone, is obviously stay safe for those of you who are dealing with heat. I know some of our listeners are in the interior where wildfire season is in full swing. So please, please stay safe. We do understand that there's some tough times ahead. And if there's anything that we, the podcast, can do to help, I don't know what that would be, but we'd be happy to see what we can do. You can obviously find the podcast online, c4podcast.com, which is our new website, which doesn't look that good because I have no web design, but it's there. It's a lot easier to find. You can also go to CanucksHockeyBlog.com. And as I already mentioned, we're on the Full Press Coverage Network. If you want to drop a text message, it's been a while since we've gotten one. We have that phone number, 604-200-6201. It's 604-200-6201. You can also leave a voicemail if you are so inspired. Leaving a voicemail means you get to hear yourself on the podcast, and we get so few, I'll probably play it. So like Andy, if he wanted to go and put an ad segment into our show, could leave a voicemail, and I'd probably just put it in.
Good
idea. That's actually galaxy brain right there.
But on behalf of myself, Chris at Lightforce, Anna Forsythe, 84603, and Andy Eide from the Sound of Hockey podcast, Andy Eide on Twitter, we are signing off this show with We Out.